Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are the views of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of our on-air affiliates or our sponsors.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, a weekly magazine format public affairs program on exopolitics, the new political science of outer space, the science of relations between our human civilization and other intelligent civilizations in the universe. Exopolitics Radio is produced by Phoenix Productions of Phoenix, Arizona, and can be heard worldwide on the internet at www.exopoliticsradio.com. Our audio archives, which remain free and open to the public 24/7, are at www.exopoliticsradio.com, and we encourage you to visit them early, late, and often to delve into them as a world and cosmic resource. We welcome our listeners on Paranormal Radio Network on Mondays at 8 p.m. Central Time, which is now heard in 282 U.S. cities and 92 countries. I am your host, Alfred Weber, and today we are continuing on part two with our feature interview with Canadian researcher Grant Cameron on extraterrestrials and U.S. presidents. Well, we have a very remarkable breakthrough on the extraterrestrial context communication theory of extraterrestrial communications involving our anchor home for Exopolitics Radio of Phoenix, Arizona. And that involves the repeated Phoenix light sightings of April 21st, 2008. And as you may recall, the Phoenix lights were seen on Monday night, April 21st, 2008, and are similar to the display of bright objects in the sky and a spacecraft about 2 miles wide seen on the night of March 13, 1997, over Phoenix, Arizona. And according to witnesses, which included a reporter for the Arizona Republic newspaper, the April 21st Monday night lights were seen over Deer Valley and other location featuring red lights. The bright lights morphed into various shapes and sizes, eventually forming a triangular and square shape. At least three U.S. military jets chased the lights as they moved west to east in the sky. Officials from Deer Valley Airport said that none of their aircraft were responsible for the lights. And here we have, so that you can hear it as close as possible, residents of Phoenix, Arizona, videotaping these Phoenix lights of April 21st, 2008, and their reactions. You can go to www.exopolitics.com to see the actual videotape. So here is their reaction.
They're like hovering.
Dude, look at them. Look at it. Dude, they're all...
He's burning them.
Dude, they're all like little circles.
But they're hot. It's like they're hovering.
What's that mean?
Can you see it, Daddy, with the camera?
Yeah.
Dude, we got a telescope. Where's the telescope at? I'm going to get the telescope.
You leave the telescope alone. It's upstairs.
I'm going to go get it.
David.
What?
There's no batteries or nothing to it.
It doesn't matter.
Look, an airplane's going toward us.
No, that airplane's real low.
It doesn't matter. You can still see it when we get it.
And people, don't mind the orange.
So strange.
Oh, my God. It's the weirdest thing. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Wait, it's forming like an L if you look at it the other way.
I wonder if the people in the airplane can see.
I wonder if they're aliens. They're out of space.
It's so weird. It's just hovering.
It shoots us an owl.
Okay. Oh my, they're like...
I think they're aliens. I think they're aliens. That'd be you, right? Daddy, can I see?
No, not...
Look at it. I don't know how they're moving. Stars can't move.
Well, they move out.
They can't move at this time of day.
And it's red.
No, but
it's red.
They have a telescope and everything. They have a telescope. I want to look at the telescope.
They're moving. They're definitely moving around.
You can't.
Dude, I'm totally looking at it right now. No, dude, Kyle called me like 5 minutes ago and told me about it.
Look, they're getting closer.
They're moving,
together.
Fool.
They're getting closer together. Hurry up, David.
Are you sure? Yo, I'm freaking out.
They're making a design.
They're right.
David, come and see. They're closer maybe, together.
Maybe it's a warning sign.
It's not a warning sign, sweetie. It's nothing to worry about. I have no idea.
Yo, earlier, yo. Yeah, earlier they were in the freaking, in like a straight line. They're not planes, whoa. What?
Get off the phone so you can hook that thing up.
You think they're hot air balloons?
Get off the phone and try to hook it up.
Hold on, let me let you go.
We need to take and put this on.
How do I do this?
This is Alfred Weber again. That was Phoenix residents watching the videotape of the Phoenix lights. Again, you can see that at exopolitics.com. There's some, and you notice they say, are they balloons? And there's some question as to whether they were helium balloons with flares. A Phoenix police helicopter pilot says that they may have been this gentleman called Malo, who, Lino Malo, claimed that his neighbor launched helium balloons. However, on examination, there's an expert, Kelly Atwood, who looked at the videos and the photos from the April 21 Aud 8 event, and she says that the lights were too bright and the wrong color to be flares, and she states that the videos do not show the normal affect that flares exhibit when they burn, and states that the issues of the Federal Aviation Administration, which will not allow the air traffic controllers to comment, and the Luke Air Force Base denials the jets were in the air when, in fact, Luke Air Force jets were chasing the objects, kind of cut through the whole issue. So the fact that, on the one hand, Luke Air Force Base denies that it set its planes up on a chase, and simultaneously there are witnesses which state that they saw planes from Luke Air Force Base chasing the lights, tend to undercut as well the whole issue of a hoax. So that kind of covers the hoax issue. But let's jump into the larger issue, and that's the context communication theory. Now, you know that Exopolitics Radio launched, once again, just to remind our listeners, on the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights being on March 13th, 1997. And we launched as close as we could on Saturday, March 10th, 2007. And now on April 21st, 2008, it looks like we had a repetition of lights that were very much like the Phoenix Lights. And you recall what the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication says, and that is that all UFO encounters or extraterrestrial encounters are, in essence, like dreams, like communications from your subconscious mind to your conscious mind. They are symbolic communications from a higher intelligent source to our culture. And so we can begin to look at these repetitious or these repeat events of the Phoenix Lights as symbolic communications. Remember the November 7th, 2006, Chicago O'Hare sighting on United Airlines gate C-17 of a 20 to 60 foot wide UFO flying saucer that came down on midterm election day. And you can see now what the Clinton-Obama elections, or Democratic primaries, turning out to be. This magnificent sort of repeat of the Lincoln-Douglas debates that, in effect, from November 7, 2006, when the police state was stopped in the United States, when the neocons lost both houses of Congress, till now, there's kind of a revival of the U.S. body politic, and it's really keeping a false flag operation from occurring in the United States. Well, in the same way, there's a remarkable series of synchronicities that happened on April 21st, 2008 that relate to Phoenix and relate to Exopolitics Radio. Because, as you may recall from our prior programming, on April 21st, 2008, at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., simultaneous with the Phoenix Lights, there was an ongoing major press conference in Washington, Exopolitics press conference in Washington, D.C., at which four non-governmental organizations, including the Exopolitics Institute, the Institute for Cooperation in Space, Exopolitics Toronto, and the Institute for Multitrack Diplomacy, were launching a joint initiative to urge the implementation of an historic UN General Assembly decision concerning extraterrestrial life and UFOs, which had originally been adopted on December 18, 1978. And 2008 marks the 30th anniversary of this decision, which urged, quote, member states to take appropriate steps to coordinate national scientific research and investigation into, quote, extraterrestrial life. So this is kind of at the world level. So we see this tremendous synchronicity coming in. Not only that, at this press conference at the National Press Club, there was research reported by our guest tonight, who you'll hear in a moment on part two, on his interview on extraterrestrials and U.S. presidents, on his research revealing the full extent to which Hillary Clinton has been fully informed on the extraterrestrial issue going back to 1993, where she was, in essence, the point person in the Clinton White House from 1993 forward on the entire extraterrestrial issue, when, together with Lawrence Rockefeller and Henry Diamond and the science advisor of the Clinton administration, they were trying to have Bill Clinton be, in essence, the disclosure president until Bill Clinton felt that he was getting too many signals of threat, and he gave the signal to Dr. Stephen Greer. He said, look, if I go down this path anymore, I'm going to end up like John F. Kennedy, i.e. they're going to assassinate me. So he got cold feet and he didn't do it. But nevertheless, Hillary Clinton was that point person in the White House. So there was a calling out, and we have on exopolitics.com an open letter to Hillary Clinton, which we were also serving on Barack Obama, who has, in an anomaly, a surprisingly retrogressive position on the existence of extraterrestrial life and on space exploration in general. Obama wants to cut back funds on it for a person who is a relatively conscientious and open-minded statesperson. So all of this was going down at the National Press Club, in addition to Joseph Geddes Buckman, who has announced his candidacy for the first congressional district, seeking a congressional seat on the extraterrestrial platform. Jimmy Carter did that in the 1976 campaign, and Stephen Bassett did that in the 2002 congressional election. And also, there was sort of a new global research and action plan, Plan C, put forward there. One of our colleagues, David Griffin, in the United Kingdom from Exopolitics UK, we'd like to present him tonight in a new series that we call Exopolitics Voices, presents this kind of April 21st synchronous, what I call context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication, that is, this is part of the signaling of the meaning of these new Phoenix lights, says, I firmly believe that waves of information, certainly novel information, is gyre or spiral-like in its flow or ingression to all layers of society and consciousness. Novel information such as that surrounding the interfacing of first contact off-planet cultures is the only entity that bypasses the law of thermodynamic wind down in the system. Thus, by coherently and transparently mapping exopolitical concepts in an interactive framework with public consensus, we now have a real chance at bootstrapping culture into a galactic sense of being. End of quote. That's David Griffin of Exopolitics UK, and you can go to exopoliticsradio.com and look at our link section, and you will find the link to Exopolitics UK and David Griffin's work. And that's part of our introduction to Exopolitics Voices. And finally, we have, just very briefly, to introduce you again to all of the incredibly packed information. We have some information from Daryl Anka. Many of you know the singer Paul Anka. Well, this is his brother, Daryl Anka. And Daryl Anka is what we call a channel. And many of you know what that is. That is a person who sort of displaces their consciousness and allows information from other dimensions to come through. And some of the information that he allows is for an entity called Bashar. Now, while I'm not sure what measure of objectivity to assign to this information, I certainly had a very good personal conversation with Daryl Anka in Hawaii at the Dolphin Extraterrestrial Conference in 2005, and I do support his extraterrestrial contact initiative. But Daryl Anka channeled a Bashar official communique regarding the Phoenix Lights and its first contact, which seems to relate to this 2008 sighting that we just experienced on April 21st, 2008. And so, without any probative value, as we say in the law, but just kind of in sort of as background for your kind of consideration, because it is channel material, I'd like to include this also. This is a partial reading called the Shillelagh Concept, and we'll have this posted at exopolitics.com as well. Look to your Arizona area in your year of 2010. There shall be another opportunity for contact with the Shillelagh. Look to your Arizona area in your year of 2010. There shall be another opportunity. In your year of 2008, you shall have an opportunity to set in motion the circumstances in your society that will allow for the initial recognition to occur in 2010. In 2012, there shall be, in a variety of what you call sacred sites, another opportunity for recognition of the Shalania. That's his term for the extraterrestrials that were behind the Phoenix Lights in 1997, and presumably these new ones in 2008. 5 years hence, what you would call your 2017, that is 5 years after 2012, there shall be the first broad awakening of the memories of contacts that have occurred in and around various cities. People will awaken to dream that memory. There will be at first psychological confusion at that, but at your year of 2020, the dreams will explain themselves sufficiently so that all of these that remember will communicate all others that recall, and there will be the establishment of communication vehicle centers, sites on your internet for those that remember the encounters. After your year of 2025, there will then begin a series of limited open contact in isolated areas, predetermined, preselected, pre-chosen on your planet. In and around your year 2030, there will be preparation for large-scale open contact in your year of 2033. These events are, as we read your energy now, you have the ability in your year 2008 to put exactly this timeline in motion. You also have the ability to extend this timeline depending on what you do in your year 2008. It is in your hands now more than ever before. Begin open dialogue. Begin request of open discussion of what your government knows of extraterrestrial existence. So we're going to post this at exopolitics.com. But it is very interesting that this is the Daryl Anka channeling sometime before, of course, 2008. And it talks about 2008. And here we have a recurrence of the Phoenix Lights, which you can see for yourself. You've just heard the family that videotaped them, and you can see them for yourself at www.exopolitics.com. Once again, we're looking at exclusively here on Exopolitics Radio through the framework of the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication. If you really want to know what the Phoenix Lights of April 21st, 2008 were about, you now know, and that is that they were integrally related to that we have to put a timeline into motion, and they were related to the various subject matters that were discussed at the National Press Club press conference. This is a hypothesis of April 21st, 2008, at which were discussed a United Nations initiative to implement the UN decision on extraterrestrial life, at which were discussed the open letter to Hillary Clinton and by extension to Barack Obama and to John McCain, and that is that it is time for disclosure by the U.S. government, and in which were discussed other plans by persons who plan to run on the extraterrestrial ticket and have similar plans. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned for our feature interview, part two, with Canadian researcher Grant Cameron on extraterrestrials and U.S. presidents. Thank you. I'm Alfred Weber, host of Exopolitics Radio. Phoenix Productions makes my dreams come true on Exopolitics Radio. Let Phoenix Productions make your dreams a reality. Phoenix Productions' comfortable studio in Phoenix, Arizona offers an award-winning creative team to script and shoot your video, commercial or documentary, record your album, demo reel, graphics, photos, promotional materials, training projects, infomercials, full-service CD and DVD capabilities, video, stage, voiceover talent, vocal, instrumental, musical performance, DJ live sound and high-definition video and digital audio recording. Contact Phoenix Productions today at 602-476-1502. That's FINISProductions.com. Thank you. You're listening to Exopolitics Radio. We'll be right back.
Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber.
Politics Radio, and we are continuing with our interview. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Thank you.
Now, who are the presidents, the U.S. presidents that from your research and your mind stand out for you from an extraterrestrial point of view, either from ET contact or other issues?
The big ones would be Truman, of course. Truman played a major part in putting together all the different intelligence agencies and stuff like that, and in sort of sealing this thing up. Eisenhower was critically important because there was a number of stories that involved Eisenhower. There's even a story that he had a dealing with Einstein with the overflight of Washington, D.C. This is a story that we have the audio of Frank Edwards telling this story in the 1950s. Nixon is an important one. Nixon, from all the stories that I've seen, seemed to be the guy who turned it over to the military-industrial complex. Rather than having the government run the program, it was basically contracted out and given to business in 1969 in that period. That's a story that's always run around, and it seems to make sense. A lot of them have a number of interesting stories to tell. Gerald Ford was involved in Michigan with J. Allen Hynek with the UFOs there, was very adamant that there should be a congressional investigation. And when he got into the White House, then suddenly became quiet, which was always the thing that I've struggled with for many, many years, is people like Gerald Ford, who was very adamant that UFO disclosure should take place, Jimmy Carter, who said during the 1976 campaign that he would release everything that was available on UFOs if he got in, he would release the files. These guys were very adamant, and then suddenly they get into the White House, and suddenly they're quiet, and they never talk. And it's a question I work on constantly, is what is it that turns them around? If you or I were the president, would we quieten down? Would we get a briefing that would shut us up as well? Or what is it that keeps these guys quiet? Because Jimmy Carter is a guy who's fairly honest. You know, he teaches Sunday school. He's a straight, upright guy. How did they silence Jimmy Carter? Ronald Reagan, very, very interesting, because he was almost like Bill Clinton, was extremely interested in UFOs, didn't really hide the fact that he was interested in UFOs, and could see the sort of the overall implication that mankind is one, that we, you know, he talked about the alien invasion, how mankind would unite, and so realized that there was more to the world than just a bunch of different races, that we are all human beings. George Bush Sr., one of the people definitely who knew what was going on. We have the audio where he tells Charles Huffer, Yes, I know some. Yes, I know a lot. Because he was basically asking Charles Huffer when he was asked the UFO question on the campaign in 1988. He told Charles Huffer, give me what you've got. And that's when Charles Huffer said, you're a CIA man. You know what's going on. You know the UFO story. And that's when Bush basically confirmed, yes, he knew what was going on. So he is one of the insiders. A lot of people who were with presidents were, to me, confirmed to be insiders. Henry Kissinger, who was with Nixon, Carlucci, who was National Security Advisor to Reagan. These are all people who are insiders who know what's going on. The Clinton story is massive. The Clinton story on my webpage is 60, 70 pages long. Massive story. Bill and Hillary Clinton, the unbelievable story of people who honestly tried to get this thing out and were not able to do it. And George Bush, the President George Bush, basically again making an offer to say, yes, I'm going to put Cheney on it. We're going to get disclosure. And basically turned out to be a president who everybody else ran the show, and he just was the figurehead. And it was actually Cheney who was the guy, and we really couldn't get to him, although I did get one question to him. So there's been a whole series of very interesting stories over the years, and varying opinions of whether these, how much they knew. It's an unbelievable constitutional problem if the president doesn't know. If the president is not being briefed, the Americans have some serious problems, because if they can not brief him on this, they can not brief him on a lot of stuff. And then the ultimate question comes down to, if the president isn't being briefed, if the president isn't running the situation and the contact with ETs and the negotiations, who's running the country?
Right. Well, this also comes back to the issue of John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
And I remember, I'm sure that you've seen the redacted CIA reports of his involvement with Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
And various rumors that people searching for the plausible causes of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, you know, look at multiple reasons, but one of the reasons that has been put forth over the years among many is that John F. Kennedy had knowledge of the extraterrestrial presence and was planning a disclosure speech. And I wondered if you had tracked down any of that information.
I've worked on all those documents, all the stories. I've tried in vain to confirm some of this material. I will be lecturing in the States. I was banned from the United States, but now I lecture for nothing in the United States, so I don't have an issue of needing a visa. But one of the things I will be playing when I lecture, I may be in Laughlin lecturing and at the X conference and in Ozark, is the secrecy speech. I'm going to play the secrecy speech by John Kennedy, and it's about two minutes and 42 seconds. Just unbelievable speech on the secrecy and why we shouldn't have secrecy and why we should have openness. And he was a guy who may have had something to do with his death. I know that Bill Clinton believed. One of the FOIs that I did file with Bill Clinton was for the story that Hubble had told in his book in 1997. He said that Bill Clinton sent him out to find the answer to two questions: who killed JFK, and number two, are there UFOs? And one of the stories that was going around, as you know, Stephen Greer spent a lot of time trying to get inside the Clinton White House and had a contact who was friends with Bill Clinton, and he had put this material through and was, of course, asking President Clinton to get disclosure. And Bill, and he's told the story a number of times, he said this friend of Bill Clinton came to him and said, the president can't do what you're asking him to do. If he does, we're afraid he'll end up like JFK. So Clinton was a big fan of JFK. He had met him when he was a young person, and I firmly believe that Clinton believed that if he did rock the boat too much on UFOs, that he had told this guy there was a fear that he would end up like JFK. So maybe JFK didn't get knocked off, but Clinton believed that that may have been part, because that was one of the things he was very interested in trying to find out. Why was JFK killed? And, you know, you have the story, why would Bill Clinton go and reinvestigate it unless he didn't believe the official conclusion for JFK's assassination?
Right. Now, to your knowledge, who were the presidents that, A, there's some research indication had face-to-face meetings with extraterrestrials, and B, may have had contact experiences of some kind with a UFO or a craft or, you know, things of that sort?
Not much. The only one for sure, there's a lot of stories about Eisenhower having this interaction at Edwards Air Force Base, and now there's even stories running around about him being at Holloman Air Force Base, although the Eisenhower Library maintains that he not only was not at Holloman, he was never in New Mexico. Contact, there was a story going around that Vice President Gore's two daughters, I think it was, were contactees. There was that story running around. A lot of these stories are very hard to nail down, and that's what I basically do is I go to the libraries and I try to get confirmation of, for example, if someone tells me there was a story that Johnson was at a crash in 1964. So then I will run all the calendars and all the correspondence around that time and try to track this stuff down. But as I said, the main problem with confirming a lot of this stuff is that right from the word go, Truman made sure that this was going to be something that if you talked about it, you talked about it, but you never wrote it down, so that it could never be tracked. So a lot of this stuff is done orally, and it's very, very hard to confirm. I've seen all the stories, I've seen all the rumors, but in terms of actual material that in the library where you can actually cross-index it and confirm it, there's not much there.
Right. Now, what would be your ideal scenario for the incoming U.S. president with regard to extraterrestrial disclosure or an exopolitics position?
Oh, my goodness. That's a good question. A situation where you declare that you want openness on the subject, congressional investigation, all witnesses who can claim to have material can come forward and start from there. And because I don't really know what the presidents have access but you can open it up. And Bill Clinton did do that. He exempted everybody from the Roswell crash. That they could come forward and their secrecy oaths wouldn't be in effect, just didn't do it very publicly. But I think if you have a congressional investigation and the president makes clear that if there's something to this, anybody can come forward and talk freely and get the ball rolling. And I think it would take off from there.
Right, so that the first step would be some sort of an amnesty from either the secrecy or the secrecy oaths or from any criminal prosecution that may be outstanding for acts committed.
Yeah, and it would have to be a very public amnesty because, as I said, Clinton did give an amnesty to the Roswell witnesses, but even I really didn't know about it for quite a while. It was sort of an indirect type of thing, and if I didn't know about it, I'm sure the people who had critical material for Roswell wouldn't have known that they would have had amnesty either.
And to your knowledge, did anything come of that?
Not that I'm aware of, no, nothing. There are some people in the latest Roswell book who have stated that they're now talking, and that had some effect because the Schmidt and Kerry were telling people that you now have this amnesty. So it did have an effect. But if you have an open speech, because the president carries a lot of weight, if the president stands up and speaks or talks about it in a State of the Union address or something like that, it's very public and everybody knows. But this indirect type of thing where you sort of give information to the Air Force that this amnesty exists, it really doesn't have much effect.
Right. So what is your kind of informal sense if Hillary Clinton, in fact, does become the next president of the United States?
Absolutely not. Hillary Clinton is a seasoned politician.
Uh-huh.
She will not touch this thing unless she's forced to. That's what I said. I see ufology as the same as any other political movement, whether it be the African-American civil rights movement in the 1960s, whether it's the gay rights movement, whether it's women's right to vote in 1917, 18, whatever it was, that or Greenpeace fighting their battle. This is a battle that we have to win. We have to marshal our forces. We have to prove to people that this is an important issue. And we shouldn't have any special thing. At no time, I absolutely firmly believe, at no time will the government throw up its hands and says, okay, okay, we're going to disclose. It will not happen that way. It'll happen with a situation where it gets out of control, like these documents, the Hillary documents, where it becomes a major type of thing that the Washington Post runs it and it starts to pick up momentum, or the government has a situation where you have 10,000 or 20,000 people on the Washington Mall protesting. And that's how a lot of these issues worked. They did, whether it was women's right to vote or gay rights, these people didn't get the government didn't just say, okay, we're going to give you the right. It was something that there was more pressure, more momentum, more people jumped on the bandwagon, more people believed it. They were convinced that this was the right thing to do, and suddenly it became something that would get you some votes, and then they'll jump on the bandwagon. In fact, I can't remember the senator's name, Stephen Greer, when he had the big news conference in 2001, he had a number of congressional people who approached him and said, I want to see all you've got. And one was a very powerful guy, and Stephen Greer tells a story, his name just escapes me, and he said, I want to see it. Stephen Greer gave him all the material, and then he said to him, okay, you get out in front of this thing and get it going, and I'm behind you. And that's basically what it's going to come down to, is if you get a pile of people and you get a lot of support behind you, then the politicians will jump in. And that's why Hillary Clinton will never do anything, because she's a seasoned politician and knows what are the things that will make people vote, what are the things that are going to get her reelected, because that's what it's all about. It's about getting elected. So you don't say anything stupid. You don't you try to appeal to the groups that are being hardest hit. Like now it's the real estate crisis. So now she makes this latest proposal that she's going to bail out this whole thing, because she knows this will get her votes. So when we do our work as ufologists, as exopolitical people, we do our work and we marshal the support and we get enough people there to force the issue, then they'll all fall in line. But not until. And we shouldn't get a special privilege just because our subject is important. 47 million people in the United States don't have health insurance. It's an important issue. But until a number of people can get that on the front burner, it's not going to get political support, and we have to do the work. We have to. It's an example. Let me give you a prime example. 2004 election, Wesley Clark is asked a question by Jay Buckley at the New Hampshire primary. Jay Buckley was a space shuttle astronaut. He asked him, what's your vision for space? And here's this four-star Army general stands up and says, I believe we can go past the speed of light. I've argued with physicists. And he makes this bizarre statement about how we can exceed the speed of light and all this sort of stuff. And then I start getting email. And one of the emails was, one of the birds says he's been briefed on crash flying saucers. So I contact a lot of state directors, MUFON state directors in the United States. I contact a lot of my friends. I have a lot of people I know in the United States on UFOs. And I said, he's running around. Somebody has to ask him the briefing question. He's a four-star general. Ask him the briefing question. Have you ever been briefed on the subject of UFOs? If so, when was it and what were you told? And a lot of MUFON state directors told me, I don't want to embarrass him. And I said, if you won't ask the question, if I won't ask the question, we should not expect the government to suddenly give up and give in on this issue. It's up to us to force the issue.
Right. That's a very good point. And once again, we've come to the end of a very exciting segment. We have 1,000 questions to ask you, Grant, and that's the sign of a very good segment. So I know that in the future, we look forward to having you again on Exopolitics Radio.
Yeah, perhaps we'll get a break, and there'll be another big break of documents from the library, and maybe we can talk again, because I'm sure it's going to happen in the next 11 months. You're going to see a lot of stories about UFO documents again coming out of the Clinton Library. I have probably 90 requests still pending, 30,000 pages being reviewed. There's going to be a lot of UFO documents coming out of that library.
Excellent. We've been with Grant Cameron, who's the researcher and curator of a very valuable resource, which I urge you to visit at www.presidentialufo.com. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
This is your host, Alfred Weber. Would you like to download instantly the book Exopolitics by Alfred Weber that founded the field of exopolitics and was a cosmic trigger to a paradigm shift of opening to extraterrestrial civilizations? Would you like to download a CD-ROM of Exopolitics Radio Season 1 uncut version with interviews you have not heard on air? You can do so now by going right now to our website, www.exopoliticsradio.com, and downloading. There is no shipping, there is no waiting. Downloading the book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe by Alfred Weber, and the CD-ROM, Exopolitics Radio Season 1, Uncut Version. You'll be helping yourself, Exopolitics, and Exopolitics Radio into Season 2. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Well, this is rather, I think, a momentous radio program because Exopolitics Radio was born on the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights. And, you know, we're just in our, you know, just had our first anniversary. And here we are. And the Phoenix Lights have happened again in 2008. And we're all witnessing them. And you just heard them. And you can go up on exopolitics.com and see them. And now we've just heard that, and we know that on April 21st, 2008, the Phoenix Lights occurred, and synchronistically, by the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication, we can posit that the Phoenix Lights were signaling, hey, we want you to really get square with and do your diamond mind. You know, the Phoenix Lights were in the form of a square, and then in the form of a diamond, and do your diamond mind, which is a Buddhist saying. Diamond mind is like really powerful mind, on the UN initiative, on the world acceptance of the extraterrestrial presence, on the three presidential candidates, Clinton, Obama, and McCain, and let's not forget Ron Paul, and let's not forget the Greens, you know, good old Cynthia McKinney and Ralph Nader, to really get behind making the extraterrestrial presence known. And also, what we heard through Daryl Anka was, now is 2008. Isn't that remarkable? This is 2008, all about the Phoenix Lights. It's all coming together. And that now we have to work. There is a timetable, but we have to put it in motion in 2008. We all have to get together to communicate to the government that we want the extraterrestrial presence known. And we have to move that now if we want to stay with the timetable and have this all move with the timetable. If we drag our feet, well, the timetable is not going to happen. So I think that we've been given a very definite message to the people of Phoenix. You're hearing it. To the people of the world that are listening to this broadcast, we're all hearing it together. This is Exopolitics Radio, which is produced by Phoenix Productions, executive producer Richard Romero Sr., director RV Romero, producer and editor Chris Romero. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and Phoenix lights envisioned day, week, and life. Thank you.